Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hi. Welcome to the new and improved Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina. I'm sitting here with Bob Brill. And, of course, Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And our guest author for tonight is Johnny Bernhard, and she is in Tennessee. Or, no, I'm sorry, Mississippi. And we have all of that. And tonight we have Henry Park II's right here on the Writer's Block.
Cool. You're listening to the Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Don't anybody be afraid to sing along with this song.
You know, when I was a disc jockey many years ago.
Well, it had to have been that many because you're over here chair dancing.
Yeah, right. You know, I used to play the crap out of that song when I worked in Oklahoma.
Did you? I love that song.
It's one of my favorites.
And
it
so fits tonight's novel and the writer that wrote it.
It
so
does.
There you go.
Good choice, Jimmy.
There you go. So, hey, let me tell you something here, Bob.
Yowza.
You've written your first novel. You've stacked the pages. You've tacked your last period.
Oh, my goodness.
And now you're done, right?
Yeah.
No.
I'm sitting here looking at a computer that says, no, you're not done.
No, you're not done. Yeah, because you still got editing to go and rewriting and more editing and more rewriting. Then you got proofreading. Then you got more editing. And then you got more rewriting. And if you're real fortunate, then you can start designing a cover and possibly get something printed and have it in your hands as
a
book.
Don't do it on your own. Don't never design your own cover.
Never design your own cover. At Black Dog in Tuscany Bay, you just threw me off there for a second. Tuscany Bay, we can help you do all that. And I'll tell you what, for a very, very, very nominal fee, we can get you started. Actually, we can get you a book. We can get you something that is edited and proofread and on the shelf. And however long you want it to take, we can do it fast, we can do it slow, and you're a lot smarter to go slow. So you can give us a call at 805-795-3165, or you can email at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpaolinelli, P-A-O-L-I-N-E-L-L-I, at tuscanybay.com. And we're hanging around so we can help the new writers, and that's all we do. So give us a call. And Bobby Jean, you have a little something you want to say.
You know, that song reminds me that chilly winds are coming. Wrap yourself up in the West. Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rock Mount Ranchwear, The Scully Leather Company, Dan Post Boots, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com. And we love our listeners here. Enter code WB100 and receive $10 off your order. You can call me toll free at 1-877-340-9378. It's always a great day out west.
Very good. I like that commercial. And she does it much better than I do.
Oh, she does.
Okay. Johnny Bernhard is a former English teacher and journalist. She is passionate about reading and writing. Her works have appeared in the following publications: University of Michigan Graduate Studies Publications, Heart of Ann Arbor Magazine, Houston Style Magazine, World Oil Magazine, The Suburban Reporter of Houston, The Mississippi Press, University of South Florida, Area Health Education Magazine. Holy crap, that's a mouthful. The International Word Among Us, Southern Writers Magazine, The Texas Review, and on and on and on. And I'm not going to go any further with Johnny because she needs to come in here and tell us all that on her own. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Johnny Bernhard.
Hello.
Hello.
Here.
Well, it's been a while, but we finally got you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to have you. So we actually, I think all of us read A Good Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk a little bit about that. And I will warn you that at 7:40, we have Henry Park phoning in. So we're going to have to kind of move it along tonight. But tell us a little bit about A Good Girl. And I hope the music was to your satisfaction. I know it fit the book.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. Thank you for that. I have to say I'm more familiar with the Patsy Cline version of that, but a great song, a classic.
Oh, I know, huh?
A Good Girl came out, debuted March 2017, is published by Texas Review Press, the Texas Book Consortium. That's a university press system in Texas. It's historic fiction, literary fiction, if we were going to describe its genre. It's the story of family. It's the story of immigrants. And several themes playing in that novel. I wrote it in third-person narrative, which is a pretty tough narrative to write in as an author. But I did it so I could provide those inner thoughts of the protagonist, Gracie. I've had a great opportunity in several states pushing the book. It's been a big favorite for book clubs. I've taught it at a university and several writer conferences along the coast, from Florida to Texas. It's been an interesting book to discuss with others. I found that once people read it, they begin asking questions about their own family and their own heritage, which, as an author, that's a sweet spot because you want a reader to make that type of emotional connection to what you're writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. I found the book fascinating in that virtually every relative, male relative of hers, going back to when her family immigrated to from Ireland, almost every male relative developed an alcohol problem and took off, came back, took off, came back, and that would including her own father,
the Irish.
Well, you know why God invented whiskey, you know, is to keep the Irish from getting control.
Well, it was the maternal side of the family that was Irish, mm-hmm. but the paternal, the father, the male figure, was German.
Right.
So in writing that storyline, that backstory, I did a lot of research about alcoholism. And it is known to be hereditary. So I couldn't, as a writer, just say this is the problem of Henry, the protagonist's father.
Mm-hmm.
I had to give a reason, mm-hmm. a more complex reason, why Henry had this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what opened up the backstory of this family leaving Ireland, connecting with the Germans in Texas. And all that is historical fact. I did a lot of research through the Galway Advertiser about the famine in Ireland at the time, and then I used the Texas Almanac online through the Texas Historical Society, which was unbelievable in what they provided. Pictures of these places, details about that hurricane that happened in the little outpost where the German mm-hmm. boy mm-hmm. first meets the Irish girl.
Mm-hmm.
All that is true fact. And in fact, what's a little chilling, I don't know if all of you remember Hurricane Harvey from last year. It flooded Houston for days. It was a significant storm. it also flooded that same area where that hurricane was in the 19th century. And I was able to go to an author's event right after Harvey. It had been planned 6 months in advance. We didn't know Harvey was coming, but I was determined to make it to that little town. They had a little history society there. They were interested in the book. And we went with my publisher and donated a ton of history, Texas history books, for their library. But that's all historical fact. The fiction, of course, would be the characters. Mm. And so as the writer, you just don't want to write that Henry's an alcoholic, because life isn't that black and white, is it? You have to give a reason. You have to give a connection. So that was the entire backstory of that male lineage.
Johnny, you know, when I read, of course, I read, you know, from the very beginning. So, of course, it said that the book was historical. I mean, I'm sorry, it was fiction. But you give us this mm-hmm. really well-developed family tree right in the beginning, which I referred back to several times. Thank you for that. And
I appreciate you saying that, because many readers have told me that. And here's the real reason why I did it. I had so many characters in writing that story that's how I kept all those connections about what character was where and what county and what century.
Yeah. Well, I kept thinking, okay, so maybe is this really like her family tree and she's just substituted other names and she's really telling us she's really using her family history somewhat, you know, to shape the story. And I was also curious. I felt like looking at that tree that there are a lot more stories that you could tell. I wonder about like Patricia's mom and the boys that are left behind. And there's a part of me that would like to think that they just don't die in the next 30 days, that they have like an incredible story that could be very different, you know, or Jonas's brothers and sisters. It's like, oh, I wonder, you know, whatever happened to Peter, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, your first question, no, it's not biographical. It's not. I did take stories I heard as a child. My grandmother went through a terrible hurricane in Port Lavaca, which is a real town and used in the book, and told me the stories of that hurricane and how she woke up one morning and everything she owned was floating in the water and she no longer had a house. I come from a family of great storytellers. I'm not Irish. I'm actually, my maiden name is Fritz, and I married a German, first generation German. But I do love the Irish, and probably the line that is most true to my own life is that I do have a daughter that lives in Ireland who married an Irishman and who met him at an Irish pub in Oxford, Mississippi. Now, that is too magical to make up to be fiction, of course. And in getting to know that family, I've traveled to Ireland many, many times, and I love the people. I love the culture. And I wanted to tell the story of those people and how they suffered to come to this country. So that began the more I researched, the more I wanted to write. But there is no Jonas in real life, although I have to tell you, Jonas is my favorite character, because in writing him, I thought, and this is great when you get there as a writer in that process, because he was 100% fictional, I didn't feel any drawback or any apprehension of letting him be as bad as I wanted him to be. He's very enjoyable to create because he's like that guy we've all known in life that he never quite makes the mark. You want to believe in him because there's such a lovely side to him. However, he just can't rally. So I love Jonas, and it's interesting in book clubs, a lot of people want to talk about Jonas. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to say, well, when Jonas, did he drown or did he commit suicide?
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote that on purpose.
Johnny,
think what's going to happen.
Johnny, I've got a question I wanted to ask you about the process. And myself, I'm my family's genealogist, and I know when you do a lot of research, there's a lot of different avenues to go nowadays. Were you able to use things like Ancestry.com and other other?
No, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. But I've had a lot of friends and people I've met on the road with the book that did that after reading the book. And to me, that's the greatest compliment I could ever receive, that the reader was that intrigued about this family story to learn what their real story is. That's magical, and I'm grateful for that. Hmm. But most of my inspiration, first of all, the third-person narrative, a lot of Catholicism in the book. I love Flannery O'Connor. She was a great writer from Alabama. I love Faulkner. So I love those heavy reads about the human condition and about ordinary people trying to navigate life the best they can. So that was an inspiration, going to Ireland and hearing the locals talk about the famine. Maybe they heard the words of a great-great-grandmother, or even hear them talk about the trolls. They're such a lovely culture, and they're gifted storytellers. And, of course, my grandmother was a great storyteller. She was German, and her family came in Indianola, the place I wrote about in the book. They got on a wagon train, just like I wrote about with Emil. That's what he did in the book, and brought those Germans to Central Texas, you know, the Austin area. So all of those things inspired me to tell this story. And of course, I was very intrigued by the words in the Lord's Prayer, which serves as the climax of the book, when Gracie makes the confession with the Irish priest, and she says something to the effect, I've been saying this prayer, a rote memorized prayer, my entire life, forgive us as we forgive others. However, I've never applied it. So all of those things served as inspiration in writing the book.
Well, I know when you talked about the human condition, I kind of noticed that right off the bat in How We Came to Be. And I was very intrigued about the first two chapters of how you really, really reiterated that your main character there, wine played such a major part in her daily routine. And it was like, I kept thinking to myself, gee, I wonder if that was difficult to do. I you know, as far as laying that out there, because obviously you have to take that, you have to draw from somewhere. And I'm not saying it's from your own life, but you have to draw that from somewhere.
No, of course. It's logical to think that way. Karen, the protagonist and How We Came to Be, you know, I've never been a single mom. I've worked with single moms my whole life. That's a hard job. And so in writing Karen, I wanted to honor the single mother and tell her story, how difficult that is. So in telling that, Karen's issue is her loneliness and feeling that she has failed because of a failed marriage. Again, she's Catholic. That's a big no-no in that world. And so, Karen, I think like many people in life, when there's suffering, there's emotional suffering, they find something, a substitute, or we could say a crutch. That could be shopping. That could be drinking a lot of wine. That could be counting every calorie. I mean, there's a whole lot of isms out there that people develop because they're suffering from something. And so that's Karen's story. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the nonfiction part of that, my involvement as the author, is that I was a high school English teacher. I loved it. I learned so much from my students about people and about life. I wanted to write about some of the students that had crossed my path, and I continued with my element of the immigrant or the refugee theme that I had in A Good Girl. The refugee in How We Came to Be is a World War II refugee from Budapest, Leona. And I was inspired to write about Leona. I was in Budapest, I believe, about 5 years ago. And there is an incredible memorial near the Danube. And Budapest is really two cities. Buda is in the hill. It's hills, the very ancient city. Pest is the modern city, and the Danube separates it. It's quite fascinating, a beautiful culture. And right on the banks of the Danube, there's a memorial dedicated to the Jewish population during World War II. And it is a collection of bronze shoes. There's a child's shoe, a woman's shoe, several men's. And I was struck by the memorial to think, once I found out what had happened during World War II in the city, is that they took several Jewish people, men, women, and children, and others, and they lined them up along the banks of the Danube, and they told them to remove their shoes, and then they shot them, and they fell dead into the river. And I couldn't get over the fact that someone's shoes were more valuable than their life. And that, I began researching, because I was so intrigued and so moved by that work that I created Leona. And Leona's suffering is her loneliness and as a widow woman and dealing with the past and the loss from the past. And then we have an 18-year-old girl in this story, Tiffany, who is about to launch herself from her mother's house into a large public university. And she deals with her own insecurities in a different way. And that's the title, How We Came to Be. These three unlikely women in different walks in their life come together out of need and create a family. So it's how we came to be, not who we were separately, but how we came to be something better as a family. I'm just very moved as an author to write about metamorphosis in people and how people deal with change. Because change is constant. You cannot escape it. Sometimes we're lucky and our only change in our life can be we get a new job. And sometimes we're unlucky and that change could be war. And we're a refugee, or famine, and we're an immigrant, or an addiction, and we're an alcoholic, and we lose our family. So those are the themes I write about.
Well, and qualified to do so. You've done just a terrific job. I did not get a chance to get into How We Came to Be. As I told you on Tuesday, I probably wouldn't have a chance. I did not. But I loved A Good Girl. Absolutely adored it. It was a great story. So, kudos.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And now I need to put you on hold for just a second. Need to do a real quick commercial, and then we'll get back to you, and we'll give out a phone number, and maybe some of your crazy friends will try to call you.
Perfect. Thank you.
So, y'all just hang tough, and we'll be right back to you. Okay, here we go. If you want to go away just for a couple days or maybe for a vacation, you've bought your tickets and you've got everything all planned, and then afterthought, what about my dog? Well, hell. All Dogs Rule can take care of that problem for you. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place where your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. And you know what? They provide everything for your four-legged friend, a place to run and play, 20 acres on the beautiful, beautiful Sespe River outside of Fillmore, California. And your dog, well, your dog just gets to be a dog. That's kind of cool. And they also offer, if you're needing it or want it, they have additional services, including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and extra training if you actually want it. So give them a call at 805-524-1100 or go to their website at alldogsrule.com. And Russ and Karen, of course, will love you for it. And that number again is 805-524-1100, alldogsrule.com. And we are back. It is now 7:26. We are with Bob Brill and Bobby Jean Bell and our guest, Johnny Bernhard, on the radio. And we have a phone number to give out, which is 818-602-4929 if you want to call in. And apparently somebody beat me to the punch. So let's see who's on here. Hi, you're on Writer's Block Live. Who am I speaking to?
This is Claire Fullerton.
I knew it. I was going to dare you to do this.
Hi, Claire. Hello, Johnny. I've enjoyed this show, everybody. Nice to hear everybody's voice tonight.
Well, thanks, Claire. Didn't we just talk to you last week?
I know. Y'all tired of me?
No, not at all.
I have a question for Johnny that I am dying to ask, and it's about her process. So can I ask it?
Of course.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'd like for her to talk just a little bit, because I read both books and love them, and I want to know what she's working on next. And I also want to know if she immediately after completing one novel takes a break or starts another, or how is her writer's life with regard to her process in churning out books?
Well, I'll start with your first question, Claire, and thank you for your interest. I'm currently working on a third novel. It's called Sisters of the Undertow, and a lot of themes of water. But basically, this is the story of two sisters. One, the oldest, is born perfect, intelligent, beautiful, athletic. Everything she touches is gold. The other sister was born at 29 weeks, certainly not as gifted intellectually, some health problems. Their personalities are extremely different. So the storyline is basically how they bounce up off of each other and how, just like in the first two novels, change affects them. So I've been plotting along with that. My writing process is, Claire, to be very, very honest, some days I'm lucky if I get a paragraph. Some days I can write 2,000 words. Some days, and I haven't had this in a long time, I had it when I was writing A Good Girl. It was just a magic time where I was completely unaware of time, my immediate surrounding. I was just in that writing with those characters, and I felt like they were writing the story. I was the vehicle typing it into the keyboard. Mm-hmm. I don't think that happens very often. I may never be lucky again and have that happen again. But mm-hmm. I just try to do a little bit each day, and some days fatigue just from ordinary life gets me, and I'm not feeling as creative. I think the writer's life is hard work, is very isolated work. You never know what when you're writing if someone's going to like what you're writing. There's some insecurity there, and of course, when you finally get to that process and it's coming published, you're throwing yourself out to the world with your arms open wide. And I've been very fortunate to have friends like you and my family that support what I do and champion what I do. I don't think a writer can make it in today's writing world without that type of support system. It's a very tough business.
Well, I think that the book, How We Came to Be, is, you know, it's the best book I've read in 2018, certainly. I really, really marveled and applauded you all the way through that book. And it was the way that it was crafted. I found it seamless, absolutely seamless, and not a bit of lag time in it. An engaging story. I was invested in all the characters. I absolutely positively loved it. And I think I like Karen's sardonic personality, that she kept it real, you know. I mean, she was cynical, and I loved it. And there was that line, and maybe you can quote it for the listeners here, and it was in the beginning of the book, and it might have been, you know, definitely like by page five or something, and she said, I'm having the worst time of my life, but I'm pretending I love it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What did she say?
She said her daughter's high school graduation, and everyone's acting like they're having a great time. She's absolutely miserable inside, but she's going along with the crowd because that's what the crowd expects, right? We've all been there. We give others what they expect, not necessarily what we need or want at times, and that's definitely Karen. For our writers out there, I'd like to think that what made that narrative and how we came to be so tight is that it's first person, and I was tight with the sentence structure and the dialogue. I had a lot of dialogue in that book. I think readers enjoy that, and I think it's in a more enjoyable way for us to learn really who these characters are once we hear them speaking to somebody else, just like
right.
we
well,
do.
I just loved
life.
It. Yeah, I loved it, and I've been recommending How We Came to Be to everybody just because it's such a great story. And just, you know, I hate it's so overused, a page turner, but that book is a page turner. But anyway, let me let you go, and I'm listening to the show, y'all, and I'm enjoying it as always, and sending you lots of love and all the best, and Johnny, here's to your continued success.
Oh, thank you, Claire. You're a doll.
And you noticed Claire, okay. Claire raised a glass of wine when she said that.
Of course she did.
Thanks. Oh, I've been sober for 8 years. You take that back right now.
Okay, I'll take it back right now.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Claire.
Okay, bye-bye. Talk to y'all later.
Be good. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, Johnny, I did have to ask you, is the girl in How We Came to Be, any modeling of her after any of your high school kids?
After Tiffany?
Yes.
Yes, Karen's daughter, who makes a lot of bad choices her freshman year in college. I'll tell you where Tiffany came from. Because she's the adopted daughter, and she doesn't have a real relationship with her mother. Her mom's gone on to do her own thing, teaching Pilates in Honolulu. Just a kooky mom. I knew a lot of teenage girls that had mother issues and mom was gone. I don't think that's unusual. That's sad, but I don't think it's unusual. But the thing about Tiffany's issue, and she makes some poor choices and begins using Adderall as a study drug. I had overheard some women talking about how it's used by high-achieving students because it's a great study drug. It's a stimulant. It helps them binge study. And I had been reading a lot of things online, how it's become very popular and graduate programs, particularly programs that are very intense, like law school, medical school, architectural school. So in doing that research, I realized it's certainly not as bad as the opiate epidemic, but it is epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the illegal use of a prescription drug, I think that is a very sad element in American life today. And so I try as a writer, again, to write about ordinary people who have to deal with real-world problems. And it's been interesting as I've taken how we came to be on the road, and I've done a couple of book clubs, one I've Skyped in Houston, and they really wanted to talk about that because mm-hmm. they know children that are taking it. Mm-hmm. Are their parents get them a script because they're under a lot of pressure trying to get a high GPA? It's a lot of how we came to be is about the overdoing of American life, the being over the top, the high achieving, and that how we're losing our souls. And I don't mean that in a Bible-thumping way, but we're losing the joy of life by thinking we always need to achieve and do. And that's where this World War II survivor comes in as a voice of reason, because she keeps trying to tell Karen, look, I'd understand the tears if you'd lost a family member or if your home was swept away. But Americans today get upset, and this is actually a line in the book, you get upset if you don't get sprinkles on your donuts.
Well, that would upset me if I ate donuts.
Get a grip.
Hey, we need to move on. Hey, Bobby, do you want to ask her the question? And remembering we only have about three minutes.
I'm quickly going to say that your website is great, and you have a lot of information for authors there in your blog. So we like to talk a little bit about writer's block. Do you get it? And if so, how do you work through it? Or if you don't get it, what do you think about it?
It's very real, and a writer can become panicked. I mean, it could cause some real anxiety, because the thing about writing, and once you get into the groove of it, you become addicted to it. You love it. You feel guilty if you're not writing. You love the idea of being at the grocery store and saying, oh my gosh, I left that character in the middle of that. I've got to get home and finish that. That's the sweet life of writing. However, writer's block, that's the torture. And I think it's a combination of fatigue and not getting out of your bubble. You are only going to be able to write things worth reading if you're out listening to people and looking at things. And that doesn't come sitting in front of a computer are trying to navigate and know what the world is through the internet mm-hmm. or through social media. So what I do for writer's block, I shut it down. I just say, I'm going to take 2 or 3 days off. I'll try to go somewhere I haven't been before. And it doesn't have to be, you know, an expensive trip. It could be, okay, I'm going to visit that dog park on that side of town, and I'm going to do some people watching. And I always come away with an image or overhearing a bit of conversation that I can't let out of my head. And then it comes back. But you've got to shut it down, get some rest, and tune into something going on in the world. It's not at your desktop. And I think we become too comfortable with that desktop in that little world in that room.
Yeah, that's true.
And we forget about the outside world, and that's where all the inspiration is. That's the vision. That's the great conversation.
Mm-hmm. Songwriters often answer kind of that same way, because they'll pick up a little bit of conversation, the people in the booth behind them in the diner, you know, or they find the what will be the hook, you know, in that outside world that you've got to be part of.
Well, I could see that, because I think a great songwriter is a poet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's taking just a handful of words to create a powerful impact to that listener. That's a great poet. Writer's block is hard. The blog on my website, you know, that's still a little bit of the teacher in me. And I know how hard the journey was for me in becoming a published author. It was very, very hard. And there were a lot of charlatans out there, and I was so green. I didn't know how to navigate.
And we have Henry calling in.
I got lost.
Mm-hmm. So here we go. We got Henry calling in, so...
Love that.
Henry.
Yes.
Ah.
Greetings.
Greetings. Say hello
to Mr. and Mrs. America.
Say hello to Johnny.
Hello, Johnny.
Hello. Hello there, Henry. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well, and I was really enjoying what you had to say about writer's block. I think you're absolutely right about how
she was right on, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
She's a real writer, by golly.
Oh gosh, one of those. I mean, great.
Okay, what
and
have you got for
Bobby
us?
Jean.
Oh, there
yeah,
she is.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Well, of course, my lead story has to be the loss of Burt Reynolds, wonderful actor, did
oh, yeah,
many
huh.
westerns and very well. From Riverboat to playing Quint on the blacksmith on Gunsmoke,
right.
Navajo Joe, Sam Whiskey, 100 Rifles, Cat Dancing. Does anyone have a favorite Burt Reynolds western?
Tell him Johnny Boy is here.
No, that wasn't Burt Reynolds.
Oh, it wasn't Burt Reynolds, was it?
That was Robert Redford.
Robert, yeah. Robert. Yeah.
Okay, Bob, I'm shutting off your microphone.
Sorry, Bob, you had a chance.
That's okay. I'll stick with Smokey the Bandit, you know.
Okay. I keep going back to Gunsmoke. I think those episodes hold up beautifully.
Quint Asper was his name.
That's it. That's it. You know, I loved him in Deliverance, which, of course, wasn't a Western.
Right.
A couple of years ago, he and John Voight, Ned Beatty, and director John Borman appeared at the TCM Festival to discuss Deliverance. And even then, he looked so gaunt and frail. I'm frankly a little surprised he lived that much longer.
Yeah, he's been sick for a while, so.
Yeah. Well, there's a new comic Western in theaters this week from French director Jacques Audiard, if that's how one says it, I'm terrible on French. The Sisters Brothers, shot in France, Spain, and Romania. It stars John C. Reilly, Joaquin Phoenix, Jake Gyllenhaal, Rutger Hauer, Carol Kane. It's a gold rush story, and frankly, the trailer was so unfunny that I planned to skip it, but the reviews are just great, so I would say keep an eye out for it.
Could be a Netflix movie.
Hey.
It could very well be. Speaking of Netflix, great news for folks looking forward to the Coen Brothers Western series turned feature, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Netflix has decided they're going to give it a theatrical release into 10 to 12 cities because they are, of course, hoping for Oscars. So it'll hit the big screens. Of course, that's by far the best way to see a Western on November 16th. Just last night, I was speaking to Deadwood series regular Leon Rippey. He plays Tom Nuttall.
Right.
Who owns the number 10 saloon. He tells me they are indeed rolling camera in October at Gene Autry's Melody Ranch after a 12-year hiatus. Of course, Deadwood really revived the Western. Ranch has since been the headquarters for two Quentin Tarantino Westerns and Westworld, but they're putting it all back to Deadwood, and they're jumping ahead 10 years in the story. Leon tells me the script by David Milch is just brilliant. There's a very interesting podcast series, Unspooled, to keep your ears out for. It's hosted by film critics Paul Scheer and Amy Nicholson. They're focusing on the American Film Institute's list of 100 top films of all time, their list, And yesterday I was the guest for their High Noon episode. Of course, it's only coincidence that I'm recommending it so highly. But it was brilliant.
Of course.
Oh, please pick up, yes, pick up the October issue of True West with my article on The Rifleman, which turns 60 this month.
Oh, great show.
And since I'm writing about Johnny Crawford there, in the next roundup, I interview his brother, Bob Crawford, who starred in the series Laramie.
Right.
And let's see, also in True West is my review of a pair of Robert Wood spaghetti westerns, including the only spaghetti western directed by a woman. Out of 600, only The Bell Star Story, which was directed under pseudonym by Lena Wertmüller.
Interesting.
And you can read all about this and more at, you know where, www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thanks, Henry. We'll talk to you in October. Be good, man.
I look forward to it.
Talk to you later. All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Right here. Bye-bye.
And it's Henry
Park. So much going on.
Henry Park. Yeah.
Good stuff, yeah. I mean, there is...
He's always got... He's got fistfuls of gems. He just... He usually does.
Hello?
Hello. Oh, you're there. I thought I hung up on you.
Oh, hello.
I'm going to hang up on you this time.
He heard you say you had a fistful. It's
always a pleasure.
He thought it was a fistful
of
dollars.
All right.
So.
Bye, Henry. Anyway, Johnny, in the time we have left, can you give our audience your email and your website and all that good stuff, all your addresses?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to share. You could, writers out there, I've got several blogs on craft, sharing ideas, what I've learned in my journey that I hope you'll find helpful. You can find that information at johnnybernhardauthor.com, www.johnnybernhardauthor, A-U-T-H-O-R.com.
And that is Johnny with an I-E.
With an I-E. Bernhard, B-E-R-N-H-A-R-D as in dog.
Excellent.
I'm on Facebook, social media, Twitter. Look for me. Goodreads.
Good.
All those different avenues.
Excellent.
For books and authors.
Excellent. And I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your night and your hurricane to come join us. And
well, that was a non-event. We were lucky.
Well, good.
Some good luck.
Excellent.
Oh, that's good.
Excellent. And your books, of course, are A Good Girl and How We Came to Be by Johnny Bernhard. You can get them on Amazon, I assume, and all the online booksellers.
Yes. Help out your indie bookstore. Go on in. If it's not on the shelf, ask if they'll order it.
Okay, then.
I'm really lucky with my publisher and great distribution. That works a good price for the small bookstore owner. Let's support those guys. They're hanging on by a fingernail.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yep.
Okay.
You are so right.
Okay. Thanks so much again, Johnny. And you have a coffee mug on the way. It was picked up yesterday, so you should have it probably
perfect.
Tomorrow or Saturday. Okay?
Thank you so much.
You betcha.
Thanks to all of you.
Stay in touch with us, would you?
Will do.
Okay. Bye-bye. And Johnny Bernhard. And her book, A Good Girl, was just wonderful. I just loved it. God, I've read so many good books lately.
I know. There's a lot of them.
It's just like, man, they're all over the place.
And, you know, Tuesday, Fear is coming out, too.
What is? Oh, Fear. Yeah, I know.
Matter of fact, I stopped at Barnes & Noble on the way here made sure they...
I think Jerry's already ordered it.
Yeah, I ordered my copy, so it'll be fun, too. So I'm dying to read that one.
Anyway, I've got Bobby Jean. I thought I would share this with you and Bob first. I yesterday picked up a new web address. It's called getindiebooks.com.
Cool.
And I'll be talking to a lot of indie authors and see if they want to put their books for sale on that.
Cool.
And we will of course, take probably 20% of your sales, but
hey.
It's sales you wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
It's another platform. Yep.
And it's I think it's the ease of buying and
it's the old thing about I was talking to a talent agent just recently and he cut a lot of his actors, And he said, you know, actors were, they're getting 90% of the money, and they weren't willing to do more than 10%
of the work. Yeah,
and so he had to cut a bunch of them. He said, you know, I'll take the ones that work hard.
There you go.
And so many indie authors work hard, some don't.
You know?
And it's just a matter of if you don't work hard at it, there's a way to do it, and as Jim knows, and you do it. I mean, everybody loves to write a book and get it out there and the fulfillment of that, but after that, if you write more, it's like, geez, it'd be nice to get paid for some of this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a very good point, actually. So that's going to be it for us for tonight. And thanks, Bob and Bobby Jean and of course, myself. And we're going to be out of here in just a second. I just wanted to remind everybody that next week we have Dr. Lou Bayer. And Jerry is sending out books tomorrow. They're like four or five real short self-help books. So, you know, it'll maybe teach you how to keep from putting the rope around your neck wrong. I don't know. Anyway.
How to do a radio show.
There you go. How to do a radio show. Okay, that's it for us for tonight. We've killed another Thursday for Bob and Bobby Jean and myself. We, of course, we're out of here.